everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown! You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right. Another week, another month. I can't believe it's November already. As the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues, I'm Fran Duffy, and I think we have a great show for you here on episode number 32. At the top of this week's show, we've got Chalk Talk, where Greg Cosell and I preview the Dallas Cowboys and how to prevent that week two loss that happened with the Eagles at Lincoln Financial Field against Dallas. Greg and I will dive into the tape and see how the Eagles can prevent that from happening once again here in week nine. Next up, we've got two technique where Eagles defensive end Vinny Curry and I go through the TE stunt, one of the most effective ways that the Eagles have been able to get after the quarterback so far this year. And then we close it out with Saturday scouting. Larry Williams from Tiger Illustrated is going to join us to talk about some of the top prospects available for the Clemson Tigers, who are one of the top five teams in college football at this point in the season. But before we get into all that, it's time to welcome in my favorite guy in the room after a one-week hiatus, BT, the man with a plan. What's up, BT?
Good to be back. Good to be back. How are you?
Doing all right. BT was away last week. As we remember, we had Chris Stevens making his debut on the podcast.
Had to go to the bullpen, you know, bring out the lefty.
We had to bring out the lefty. He was a little skittish. A little skittish at first. a little bit more energy. It was my
critique. Hey, it's his first rep.
First rep, no question. But you were away. Time well spent down south.
Yeah, I was in Huntsville, Alabama with Fletcher Cox. We're doing a little feature on him. He owns a couple cars, likes to drag race. And, I mean, he doesn't personally do it, but he owns cars and has drivers and stuff. So it was more of a just what's Fletcher doing in his bye week, and a lot of guys like to unwind and go to the Bahamas and do different things, and it was kind of interesting that Fletcher liked to get hands-on and really build this car up. So we just spent some time with him down in Huntsville.
That's your second or third trip down there with Fletcher Cox?
Well, we went to Yazoo City, his hometown, right, in Mississippi. Obviously, I stayed over, so we did very similar stuff where he drag raced again. So this is our second time with Fletcher doing kind of a racing feature in Alabama and or Mississippi. So good
times. Talk any ball?
Huh?
Did you talk any football?
A little bit. I was like, hey, you're having a good year this year. Somebody might go to the Pro Bowl.
Is he going to bring
you? Take?
Is he going to bring you? There you go.
So we obviously brought that up, and when we reminded him that it was in Hawaii, he was a little bit more interested. So
if you ever see pictures from the locker room during a media availability, anytime the media, you know, reporters are in the locker room talking, and if you see in the background Fletcher Cox, you will often find next to him Brian Thomas sitting and talking to him about whatever it is that they talk about on a daily basis.
Fletcher's a good guy to talk to. He usually likes to tell me about his cars and what he's done to them and stuff like that. So I appease him and kind of listen. I don't know much about racing, so it's a little bit over my head. But Fletcher came in. I was at the rookie symposium when he came in, and we kind of built a bond there. So he's one of, I would like to say he's one of my friends on the team, so he's a good guy.
Look at that. Well, he's going to be in for a big test this week against this Dallas offensive line. You've got Tyron Smith, the left tackle, and then the rookie, Lyle Collins, who's making a lot of headlines with his play. Let's dive deeper into this Dallas Cowboys offense with Greg Cosell. Get it started here with Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Joining me once again here on Chalk Talk, NFL film senior producer Greg Cosell. And Greg, I am feeling a little bit refreshed after the bye week. I know it was just another week for you, but no Eagles game for us to talk about this week. Obviously, it was a big week of self-scouting for the coaching staff, for their players on the roster. But looking forward to this Dallas Cowboys team, a team that we have talked about numerous times over the course of the season, especially going back to week two in preparation for that matchup on Sunday night here at Lincoln Financial Field. Let's first talk about this offense, because a lot of changes to this group but since we've last seen them back in week two. Joseph Randle is now out of the picture. Darren McFadden is the lead back. Christian Michael is the backup. But they're still trying to do a lot of the same things up front. You still see a lot of the stretch outside zone. You'll see some toss sweep in there. They'll phase in the inside zone as well. What have you seen from this offensive line? Let's just start with the run game.
Well, it's clear now McFadden is the back. And the last 2 weeks with Matt Cassel at quarterback, McFadden has a 20-plus carries. And McFadden is a downhill type runner. He's a track runner. In some ways, he's very much like DeMarco Murray was last year in this offense for Dallas. He's a downhill punishing runner, naturally powerful, does not have very good hips, not a change of direction, a laterally explosive guy, but he finishes runs and he runs hard. And that's where you start with the Cowboys offense. And obviously, working behind a very good run-blocking O-line.
Yeah, no question about it. And you watch this offensive line. We know what kind of player Tyron Smith is.
Yeah.
We know what kind of player Travis Frederick is. Zach Martin has been, you know, pretty much the same exact player as he was last year when he was considered one of the top rookies in the entire NFL, regardless of position. Lael Collins has taken over the starting job at left guard. Had a pretty good game this past week. A lot of people have been spreading around different vines of him blowing up Earl Thomas and pancaking Bobby Wagner. I can remember one play where
yep.
he bench pressed Brandon Meebane as a backside player in the inside zone play. Has really come along here.
Yeah, and look, the O-line was a strength last year, as we know. It's ultimately the starting point for their offense. It's the backs like Murray and McFadden now, they need a good offensive line. And they actually, even though McFadden's yardage wasn't big, I think he was 20 for 64 against Seattle. When you watch the tape, and I know you did, I thought they actually ran the ball relatively well given the quality of the opponent. Now they're playing very much a quality opponent this week with the Eagles' defensive front, and it will be tough going running the ball, but that's where their offense starts. They have to be able to sustain some offense running the ball.
Yeah, no question about it. And just staying with the offensive line, how do you feel? And obviously it's been tough because of all the interchangeable parts at quarterback. This is the third quarterback now with Matt Castle under center here for Dallas. How have you felt about this line in pass protection holding up over the past few weeks?
Not quite as good as maybe last year. Now, of course, Tony Romo would have a lot to do with that.
Sure.
But I thought last week against Seattle, I thought as the game progressed, Seattle's D-line really kind of got juiced up pretty good. And I thought they started to get a lot of bodies and a lot of pressure on Matt Castle. And I think Doug Free is at right tackle is probably the guy you want to attack. And in fact, he probably cost them a chance to win the game with 59 seconds to go when they had Jason Witten wide open down the seam. And that's exactly where Castle was going. But Free just got jacked up by Averill, and Averill hit Castle's arm and he could not throw the football to Witten. But I don't think the O-line in terms of pass protection has been quite as good.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you talk about this pass game. And, you know, obviously we know what Matt Castle brings and some of the limitations. We know what the limitations are with Brandon Weeden. But when you look at the receiving threats and you look at Terrence Williams, now we know what Dez Bryant is, we know what Jason Witten is, but you look at Terrence Williams now, who had a chance to kind of shine here. Don't know if he really met those expectations.
Yep.
Cole Beasley seems to not be as big of a factor right now with Tony Romo out of the lineup. Hasn't really been as big in terms of his targets, and then those seems to have dropped a bit with Romo out of the lineup. You know, Devin Street has gotten extra reps. They haven't really had the – I almost feel like watching them and watching that pass game, at times they were just looking to manufacture plays. Lots of jet sweeps.
Yep.
You see the screen game every once in a while where, you know, they knew they weren't able to sustain that pass game and they were just finding ways to pick up first downs.
No, and they're trying to manufacture pass plays.
Right.
And a couple of weeks ago against the Giants, they did that. They actually had a 35-yarder to Witten out of three tight end personnel, 13 personnel, which is the kinds of plays they have to orchestrate and manufacture. They had no big pass plays this week at all against Seattle. So it's been really, really difficult. Obviously, Dez is now back. He played last week. He had the matchup mostly with Richard Sherman. It'll be interesting to see how the Eagles match up to Dez, whether they view it as a Byron Maxwell game or they just line up and play wherever Dez lines up. My sense is they'll just line up and play because I think Nolan Carroll's done a really good job this year. But with Dez back, you would think they can at least maybe throw him the ball one-on-one situations and see if he can make a play.
It's interesting because you talk about the concept of double coverage, and I think a lot of fans think that, oh yeah, well you just double Dez Bryant, as if it's, you know, you just line up with two guys over top of every play. And that's not the case. You have 11 players on the field. If you ever want to blitz, if you ever want to make sure that you're stacking against the run, you have to account for gaps in the run game. You have to account for the deep half of the field. You have to account if you want to blitz. There's only so many times you can actually double cover somebody. And there are lots of ways you can do that with, whether you're rolling somebody over the top, whether you're vicing at the line of scrimmage, especially if a guy's moved into the slot. What are some of the different ways that, and this is one of the things that I wanted to answer, and I went back and looked at the ways that New England was able to defend Jason Witten, you know, and when Dez Bryant was out of the lineup, and people were able to try and take him out of the game. The Eagles have tried to do that in the past. Are there different ways that you think other than just straight up saying two guys in line of scrimmage and vicing, which, again, unless they're in the red zone, that never happens. What are some of the other different kind of double coverage concepts, I guess, that you can tend to see when you're looking around the league?
Well, I think depending on the team, and it's funny you mentioned New England, but I think they're a team that's really good at bracket coverage, bringing players from different parts of the field where they're dedicated double team players on a particular player. And I think you'll see the Eagles do some of that with Witten more than Dez. See, I think when you watch, and it's funny, as you were talking, I was thinking a lot about Matt Cassel and the kind of passer he is, even if he's playing well. He's not going to throw the ball outside the numbers very well.
Right.
He doesn't have that kind of arm. In fact, his arm now is probably below average by NFL standards. So I think you almost want to make sure that you double Jason Witten, certainly on third down, and take away the middle of the field and almost force Matt Cassel to have to throw the ball outside the numbers. He's not going to make those throws very effectively at all.
Yeah, and that's what as I continue to think about these double coverage concepts, really, again, you're limiting what you can do from a pressure standpoint because now you're relying on your front four to get home. We've seen that that potential there with the Eagles front four, whether it's with the use of TE stunts or guys like Fletcher Cox and Benny Logan just winning their one-on-ones.
Vinny Curry,
absolutely. But really also the other thing is it puts so much more importance on the other guys on the offense to be able to win in one-on-one situations. If you're doubling Dez Bryant, if you're doubling Jason Witten, Cole Beasley has to be able to step up and win one-on-ones. Gavin Escobar has to step up and win one-on-ones. Terrence Williams, Devin Street go straight down the line. Those guys have to step up in those situations and win some of those one-on-one matchups in space.
Yeah, and you can double two, but you can't double more than two.
No,
because you just don't have enough people.
There's not enough people.
So you can double. I mean, if they truly want to double Witten and Bryant, now then again, it depends where they line up, because if they line up on the same side, it makes it a little more difficult. But you can double two. You can't double anymore. And like you said, there's so many factors that are involved, because if you're going to do that, then you have to recognize you limit yourself in other areas.
Yeah, it's just so funny when you hear people, especially in the media as well, just say,
why don't they double them?
Load the double them, or you have to stack the box against the run. Well, you only have 11 guys on the field. You have to account for five eligible receivers every single play. You have to account for every gap in the run game. There's a lot of things that go into it.
It comes down to, and Brian Billick and I have had this conversation over the years, what price do you want to pay to do what it is you want to do?
Sure.
Now, if you feel that doubling Dez Bryant is the absolute key to this game, you can double Dez Bryant, and then you'll live with the consequences. If you feel doubling Jason Witten is the key to the game, then you know what? If Dez Bryant beats you for a long touchdown, then you just have to live with the consequences.
Right, and it's funny because you go back to the two games the Eagles played against Dallas last year. In one game, they placed a lot of importance on doubling Jason Witten, and it was a big Dez Bryant game.
Right.
In the other, they wanted to double Dez Bryant off, and Jason Witten ended up having a big game. It goes back to that saying, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Yep.
At some point, you've got to make sure that you're winning some, because we talked about on the offensive side winning those battles. If you're one of those people that's defending Terrence Williams one-on-one, you have to make sure you win that battle. You can't let those guys
correct
win those one-on-one
situations. It's like when I hear people say when a guy catches a ball in a zone and people say, God, what are they doing? He's wide open. Well, every zone has voids. And depending on the route concept, sometimes it breaks down and beats the zone and a receiver catches a ball and he looks wide open because he's in a particular void in a zone. If there was one zone that took away every void,
Every team would play that zone on every snap.
Yeah,
exactly right. So I'll be really interested to see how the Eagles come out to defend, because they've obviously had an extra week to prepare, a lot of different things that they were able to look at. I can remember back a couple weeks ago, the win over New York against the Giants. In that second half, there were a lot of different double coverage concepts that they were able to use against Odell Beckham, whether he was in the slot or lined up out wide. We'll see if they bust those out this week against Dallas. But you look on the other side of the football, the defensive side, and that's really the unit that has been very impressive for this Dallas Cowboys team so far. I think a lot of people haven't really, didn't really expect that this unit was going to be playing to the level that they're playing right now. Not a blitz-heavy team. They'll show some looks every once in a while, but it's a four-man rush. You're going to see Greg
Hardy. 3-2-6.
Yeah, and that, I actually saw that with you have that dime.
Started
look
against New England when they played New England and played them well, and actually 80% of the snaps against New England were 3-2-6.
Yeah, it was impressive, and the one guy that has stood out to me, he played 100% of the snaps this past Sunday against Seattle, first-round pick Byron Jones out of UConn.
And he's become an incredibly versatile player. He's he can play single high safety. He can play in the box as a safety. He plays meaningful snaps as essentially a starting safety in their base defense. He also plays over the slot in their nickel, and they play some dime, so he plays in the slot. There are times he matches up man-to-man on the tight end. In fact, that's what he had done quite a bit until this week against Seattle, when he primarily played in the slot over Doug Baldwin. But Byron Jones has become a really versatile puzzle piece for this Cowboys defense. You know, and when you made a point, you know, about this defense that a lot of people might not be aware of, if you're not really watching them, you think Rod Marinelli, who has the background with Tony Dungy and that group, Lovie Smith, and you think cover two.
Yeah.
They don't play hardly any cover two.
Right.
And in fact, they're primarily a man-to-man coverage team and primarily single high. Not a lot of split safety coverages.
No, and a lot of that man, a lot of those man looks come out of those sub packages.
Yep.
They're in nickel and dime far more than they're in base. And it does come down to, you know, is it going to be nickel? Is it going to be dime? Is it going to be the 3-2-6 look out of the dime package? Will be interesting. But it's definitely a sub-package team. Not really a lot of exotic looks, but, you know, you'll see a lot of the, you know, four down, one
yep.
linebacker, six DB, three down, two linebacker, six DB. Very, very interesting in terms of personnel. And Greg Hardy, obviously, has had a big impact on that defensive line, whether it's against the run, against the pass. Say what you want, obviously, away from the field, that there are a lot of issues there.
He's a good player on the
field. He's a great player between the lines.
And, you know, their D-line is actually pretty good. You know, you have Greg Hardy. You have Tyrone Crawford, who I think is a really good player. You know, I think they're still waiting for Randy Gregory to become a pass rusher. He's not playing that many snaps yet since coming back from the high ankle sprain. I think DeMarcus Lawrence is developing, maybe not quite into the pass rusher they had hoped, but a pretty solid defensive end.
He flashed this week.
Yeah.
Especially in plays coming from the backside.
Yep.
You saw that burst. You saw the explosion. And I think that Jeremy Mincy as well is giving them quality snaps on the outside as well. They're getting a good rotation. Sean Lee, and we talked about it after that Dallas game in week two. He's one of the best linebackers in the league as long as he's healthy.
Yeah, and I think that week two game's instructive. Look, I know Eagles fans want to believe that the Eagles offense is much better than it was week two. And you can make the point it is. You could certainly make the point they've been running the ball better. Clearly, week two, they were in that sort of 3-4 game stretch where the run game was not very good. And we've sort of documented those reasons throughout these podcasts. But the one thing that the Cowboys did really well in that game that caused the Eagles problems was the slant and scrape concept, where you slant your defensive line one way and you scrape your linebackers off of them the other way. And the Eagles had a really difficult time blocking the second-level linebacker, Sean Lee in particular.
Yeah, and really what that does for a defense or for an offensive line from a zone blocking perspective, if they're not ready for it, you know, even though when you're zone blocking, you're blocking a person that's in your zone, if you're not accounting for that movement pre-snap and somebody shows up in your gap that you weren't expecting there, now all of a sudden responsibilities can get skewed and guys can come free and make plays on the football.
Yeah, and the fact is, first-level defenders, D-linemen, when they slant hard, it really poses a great problem for a zone run game because, hey, we saw a couple times where Celek at tight end, his defensive end right in front of him slanted hard inside, and he's kind of lost. You can't just let a guy run right by you and move on to the next guy.
Right, exactly. No question. And we talked about it back then that no matter what the Eagles did, whether it was outside zone, inside zone, sweep, all of their big run plays, Dallas had an answer for it, especially when you talk about the slants up front and all the different twists that they were able to accomplish. We will see what the Eagles have in store for them this week, if there's anything new, if there's any new wrinkles. Obviously, I'm not expecting them to bust anything completely new out of the box, but what will the changes be? Will there be any changes at all? Will be very, very interesting to watch. And then from a pass game perspective, we talked about Byron Jones. Mo Claiborne, you know, former top 10 pick.
He's played well this year.
I was going to ask, what has been your impression after watching
him? Yeah, I think he's been a solid NFL corner. Maybe not exactly what they hoped when they drafted. I think they traded up to get him that year, if I remember correctly. But he's been a solid corner. Carr and Claiborne have actually been really solid. The one thing about the Cowboys, we were talking about this earlier before we started the podcast, was they don't have any problems matching up man-to-man against good players. I mean, this past week against Jimmy Graham, they matched up safety Jeff Heath. They matched up safety Wilcox. They had no problem doing that. They didn't do anything special against Jimmy Graham at all. So they're very comfortable and very confident in their ability to match up man-to-man.
It's interesting because I had a similar discussion with somebody today actually at lunch and talking about just safety play in general and how First, it started with Patrick Chung, who went to New England. Obviously, he left here, went to New England, and you know, you watch them and how they use him. You wouldn't expect that. Oh yeah, they're going to put Patrick Chung one on one against T.Y. Hilton, but guess what? They're able to do it, and you know, there's all different things schematically. And then you look at Carolina; they've got two guys, Roman Harper and Kurt Coleman, that you know the NFL left for dead. Those guys are past their prime, and now they're playing at a high level for this defense in terms of just being able to execute and do what they want to do from a secondary standpoint. It's really interesting to see.
Yeah, and you know, it all depends on how teams use players, but you know, I think the Jeff Heath thing was pretty surprising.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeff Heath is a guy who really, over the years, he's been a Cowboy, but he's not played a lot of snaps. He normally only plays when there are injuries, but he played in their dime. He got a lot of snaps. I think he got more snaps this week than in any game this season. You would assume playing a team that, well, I shouldn't say lines up predominantly in 11 personnel, because the Eagles over the last number of weeks have played a lot more 12 personnel, a lot more two tight end sets, which, by the way, puts Byron Jones, when he's at safety, then he'll match up man-to-man to a tight end.
Yeah, and that'll be interesting to watch is the personnel groupings that the Eagles deploy and then how the Cowboys decide to counteract that personnel package-wise.
You know, and what I'd really like to see, and again, you talk about self-scouting, Fran, I would really like to see the Eagles take some shots, some designed, orchestrated shot plays. You know, I think that's been missing from their offense, and I think you've got to take some shots. And you don't need big-time wideouts to do that. You can design those plays. You build them into your offense. I'd like to see them do that.
Yeah, it will be very, very interesting to watch. Obviously, it all comes together on Sunday night when these two teams face off for the second time this year. Greg Cosell, appreciate the time as always here on Chalk Talk. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Fran.
Another week full of pearls of wisdom from one Greg Cosell of NFL Films. Love having him here in studio each and every week to break down the Eagles and their upcoming opponent. More great stuff from Greg this week about the Dallas Cowboys and what we can expect on Sunday night. But before we get into the rest of the show, BT, you had a one-week reprieve from doing this, but now that you're back in Philadelphia, you can go back, check out iTunes. Are people following your instructions, and are people going and ranking the show?
Yeah, I'm back in the saddle again, and we got some love from T. Wayno, and we always ask people to rate and give comments on the podcast, and he actually did that, said he loves the podcast and learning Chalk Talk and how we intermix college football in there, and actually gave us a little bit of suggestions on how we thought we could make things better, which I like, you know.
Love it.
Some people might be a little bit afraid of criticism. We love the criticism. Tell us what you want, and we'll make it for you guys. So.
Exactly. If you're having any kind of issue with with volume technical stuff, you know, we'd love to try and see if we can solve that problem. And you can always hit me up on Twitter as well, @fduffy3. Love going back and forth.
I will call you personally if you have an issue.
Look at that.
I will give you direct attention if there's anything you need.
Brian Thomas will give you Fletcher Cox's number, and you guys can go.
I did not say that, but I will talk to you about Fletcher Cox
Yeah, so. He will talk to you about Fletcher Cox. And so let's go to an interview I had with one of Fletcher Cox's defensive line mates, Vinny Curry, where we talk about the TE stunt along the defensive line.
Time to get inside the mind of a player. It's time for Two Technique.
Joining me this week on Two Technique, Eagles defensive lineman Vinny Curry. And Vinny, I want to talk to you about running a TE stunt and the two different roles that come with that scheme. Let's start from the inside, from the tackle perspective. As the penetrator, what is the number one responsibility? What is your goal as the guy that's going to go in there first?
To not make it look like a game. You know, you can't look at your partner. You know, what you want to do is, like, if you go back to me and Connor run a lot of different games, but either I'm the grabber, you know, the penetrator. You know, what you want to do is you want to make it look as natural as possible.
So do you go back and watch yourself on tape and see, okay, when I'm the penetrator, I do this, so I should try not to do that so it's not a tell?
Absolutely, absolutely, because, you know, the next opponent is watching film on you guys too.
So then as the looper, as that second guy around, is there certain points that you have to work on? You know, obviously you and Connor work really well in tandem on that. Is there something that you're working on and focusing on from that perspective?
Different things. You know, it all varies. Who we're going against, you know, which they set line, how they set, you know, what they do well, what they don't do well.
Do you feel like going into one opponent that watching them on tape and how they protect against those type of games, sometimes the penetrator is more likely to get free as opposed to the looper? And do you appreciate that going in and say, like, okay, hey, sometimes even though I'm supposed to sacrifice myself, I may get through?
Oh, absolutely, man, absolutely. So, anytime the other guys get a sack, man, you feel like you got a sack too. You know, the film doesn't lie. Everything jumps out. You know, people that know football know that it was a game. So, cool.
Great stuff there from Vinny, teaching you about the TE stunt and how the defense uses that to get after the opposing quarterbacks. And he was able to teach you about those. I want to teach you about how to subscribe to a podcast, and it's really, really easy. All you have to do is just go to your phone, find your native podcast app, search for Eagle Eye in the Sky, hit subscribe, and this show and any other show that you want will show up on your phone on its own each and every week. You can listen whenever you want, however you want. It's really the new way to ingest content on a weekly basis, on a daily basis, if you so please. BT was the one who introduced me to podcasts, and I've never been the same since. Love listening to all the different podcasts that are out there. We have the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, the Eagles Insider podcast with myself, Chris McPherson, and Alex Smith. We have the Journey to the Draft podcast, which has made its return. We are now almost 2 months in, so if you want to get a jump on college prospects and the NFL draft, you can do that there, or with myself and Ross Tucker on the College Draft podcast. So while we're on the topic of college football and the NFL draft, let's wrap the show up with Saturday Scouting.
It's time for Saturday Scouting.
Joining me this week on Saturday Scouting, reporter for TigerIllustrated.com, Larry Williams. You can follow him on Twitter, at LarryWilliamsTI. Larry, I appreciate the time this morning to talk about the Clemson Tigers football program and some of the top prospects that should be available in the NFL draft, either in 2016 or in 2017. Let's start on the offensive side of the ball, where you've got quarterback Deshaun Watson, who's kind of the point guard of this offense and kind of makes it go. What has your interaction been like with Watson at his young age? Are the coaches relying on him to be a leader of this team?
Oh, 100%. He is a rare dude because he, in addition to being a tremendous athlete and probably the premier dual-threat weapon in college football right now, what he has between the ears is just remarkable. You just don't see that kind of maturity and that kind of, I guess, unflappability, for lack of a better word, when the pressure's on in a game. He just doesn't really flinch. And I think we saw that, you know, starting off with his first game as a college player. You know, a true freshman, he enrolled early in January of 2014, and then in the opener against Georgia, he gets thrown into the fire and just throws a dart down the seam for a touchdown. And ever since then, amid the injuries that kept him out for a substantial amount of time last season, and then this season, he has just given them, I think, a really strong presence intangibly. You know, his predecessor, Taj Boyd, did a lot of great things at Clemson, and I think Clemson fans should forever treasure him for that. But there were some moments in some big games where when the pressure was on, he sort of unraveled a little bit mentally, and that sort of trickled down to the rest of the team and sort of created some, you know, kind of a negative momentum, I guess, that led to some of their losses, high-profile losses during that time. I think Deshaun mentally is so advanced in that area. When, you know, when times get tough, he just sort of sails on and is not bothered by it. I think we saw that when they went up to NC State and were presented with some circumstances they had not yet experienced, as you know, they fall behind. The defense has given up some big plays, but Deshaun Watson just kept on motoring on, and I think that really trickles down to the rest of his teammates and really helps them comport themselves as an offense and as a team in a very impressive way.
Well, sharing the backfield with Watson is Wayne Gallman, the underclassman running back, 6'1", 205 pounds. Watching him over the summer, I really was impressed with his competitiveness, his contact balance, his ability to stay upright despite you know, the running through arm tackles and running through initial contact. I was really impressed with that from Gallman. There were times where I thought his vision was a little bit questionable, but off the field, what have you seen from Gallman, with Watson being kind of the consummate leader of that offense? Do the coaches rely on Gallman to be in a similar type of role?
Yeah, I mean, I think Watson is certainly in that sort of figurehead the foremost figurehead role on this team. But I do think Gallman, a very solid personality, you know, and I hate to sound like a homer here, but Clemson's coaches have done an excellent job of finding not just good players, but a lot of good character kids as well. And that's one of the reasons I think they've been able to keep winning as much as they have, is because it's not just the Jimmys and the Joes. It's the kids who can abide by and you know, sort of perpetuate the standard that they set. I don't think that's just coach speak, and I think that Wayne Gallman is a very solid guy in that respect. And you had to think about talking about him as a running back. You know, back in high school, you know, he was a wing back. He was not used to this sort of offense, and so, you know, when he got here a few years ago, in practice, you heard early on from the coaching staff that, man, this Wayne Gallman is something special. And he wasn't really all that highly regarded coming out of high school. But I remember Chad Morris telling me very soon after Gallman's arrival that, man, this guy is a violent runner. He runs in a very physical way that we really need. You know, a guy that can slam it up the A-gap and lean forward, you know, and get 6 or 7 yards after contact. You know, we didn't really see that a whole lot last season, early in the season. He redshirted the 2013 season, but last year you saw him run, and you're sort of wondering, you know, where is this violence that they've been talking about, you know, coming out of practice? You really didn't see a whole lot of it. Late in the year, he kind of blossomed and had a lot of productive games, including against South Carolina. But this year is when you've really seen what those coaches were looking at a few years ago and what they were forecasting for him in his career. I mean, you know, this offense this season has done something that the previous four offenses didn't do. No matter how many points they scored under Chad Morris, they have added a physical, pounding running game that really sets up a lot of their play-action passing and makes them almost impossible to defend. Previous to this year, it was more outside running, more smoke and mirrors. They sort of had to manufacture a running game. Well, this year, thanks largely to an offensive line that is way ahead of schedule, a lot of inexperience coming into the season. I mean, they are very physical up front, but I think Wayne Gallman is a huge part of that too because of what you mentioned. I mean, he's just a nasty runner, just runs with an attitude, almost like he's insulted that you're trying to tackle him. And, you know, I'm sure that'll play well at the next level whenever he's in contention to get to that level.
That's really interesting stuff when it comes to Gallman. When you coming into the season, probably the top prospect coming in on this offensive side of the football for Clemson was receiver Mike Williams. Unfortunately, he suffers that injury in week one. Where is Williams at this point? How confident are coaches that he'll be able to return to full form next season and hopefully, you know, beyond as his football career continues?
Yeah, anytime you have a neck injury like that, the utmost concern is okay, is he okay just as a human? And then you check that box and then, okay, is he going to be able to play again? Well, they were able to check both of those boxes fairly early on. It doesn't look like he's going to play this year, but they're very optimistic that he will be able to come back next year and be the same player. You know, I wonder if he might choose to just go ahead and go pro. I don't know, but I'm guessing that is in play. I think that before the injury, I thought that Williams was headed for a monster year that was going to make an early jump to the pros inevitable, because, you know, you knew you had Deshaun Watson coming back, and if you could just keep Deshaun Watson healthy, you knew that Mike Williams was going to be his top target. And so if you can just imagine this offense, you know, I mean, they put up back-to-back 50-point games in ACC road games. They've been very tough to stop. They're going to be tough to stop moving forward. Can you imagine what would be going on right now if Mike Williams were in this offense? I mean, it'd be pretty ridiculous because, you know, they had to adjust over the few weeks after his injury, because even though they're very fast, very talented, got a lot of playmakers on the outside, Williams gave them that physical, just sort of box out presence, you know, guy who could just go up and get it, the back shoulder guy, just really a big physical presence at receiver that you had with DeAndre Hopkins when he was here. You had that a lot with Sammy Watkins when he was here. You had that even with Martavis Bryant when he was here. When Williams went out, they really didn't have that. I think that Sherron Peake, you know, sort of had to grow into that role, and still probably growing, to be honest with you. Just the receiver who, with the ball skills and the physicality, to where you can, on third and seven, you can throw it up, and he's going to get it, and he's going to make your quarterback look good because he'll go out and get even the throws that are not exactly on target. So I think Clemson fans would be very excited if he were able to, number one, come back next year, and number two, come back and play for Clemson next year as opposed to going pro. But I do think that a possible jump to the pros would be in play, but that's just sort of from the outside looking in, just speculation.
Very, very interesting. So the big story with Clemson coming into the season was after losing so much talent on the defensive side of the football to the NFL draft, and you talk about some of the leaders that they lost, you know, a Stephen Anthony who went in the first round, a Grady Jarrett who ended up going a little bit later in the draft. Obviously, they also lost Vic Beasley and his production off the edge. That was going to be the big question for them coming into the year. Where were they going to get not only the talent, but then also the leadership? And you've got guys like a senior in David Reeder, an underclassman edge rusher in Shaq Lawson, who's been very productive. In the secondary, Mackenzie Alexander, Jayron Kearse, even Cardera Tankersley. Who has stepped up to be kind of the leader of this unit and really kind of take the bull by the horns and keep the rest of the guys in line?
Man, I could give you seven different names because you could say Shaq Lawson, the beast of a defensive end. You could say Kevin Dodd, the other defensive end, who nobody expected to be this good, let alone, I mean, in the picture. I mean, Kevin Dodd was just an obscurity as recently as last offseason. Nobody really thought he was going to, you know, elevate and become a really solid presence on the edge. You can talk Ben Boulware, the Will linebacker. You can talk B.J. Goodson, Jayron Kearse. I think this group as a whole, you know, nobody expected them to be a top 10 defense coming into this year, mainly because they just lost tons and tons of talent, and not only talent but leadership from last year's group. I mean, that was the best defense in the country, not just because of talent, but because they had a rare combination of talent, and but also this just rock-solid will to win and a determination that I think was really exemplified by Grady Jarrett, you know, who didn't have the measurables per se, but who was just so solid and relentless. But I think maybe what people didn't really focus enough on looking back to this past offseason when they were forecasting a really big drop-off for this defense is just how much experience the returning guys actually had. I mean, if you look at the starters, there's a lot of juniors. It's mainly juniors and redshirt sophomores, you know, third-year guys who played a ton last year. I mean, Brent Venables rotated at will last season. I mean, they had tremendous depth. And so the guys that are now the stars of this defense, you know, they were playing a lot last year. And so, you know, the standard has been upheld, I think. These guys just were defiant almost this past offseason when people were saying there was going to be a drop-off. I mean, I can't tell you how many times all those defensive guys would say, hey, there's not going to be a drop-off. We're still going to be a great defense. They were almost insulted that people were presuming that. I think the difference this year is they don't have the depth that they had last year. They can't really rotate much, if at all, at inside linebacker, those two spots. They can't really rotate much at defensive end, and so they're thin. They can't really afford an injury. Ben Boulware, that would be devastating. Can't afford an injury at defensive end, whereas last year, you know, like if Vic Beasley or Corey Crawford or Stephon Anthony would have gotten hurt, they would have been okay because they had really good guys behind them. But in terms of your initial question, you know, who is sort of
grabbed this defense by the throat and been, you know, really exemplary leaders. I think it's a lot of different guys, honestly.
All right, so my question for you, Larry, to wrap this up, who's next in this Clemson program? Is there a guy that maybe is an upperclassman that isn't really recognized on the national stage, or is there an underclassman that just hasn't reached the limelight yet that will be on everybody's radar when it comes to the NFL draft in the coming years?
Number 42, interior defensive lineman, Christian Wilkins. He's a true freshman, 300-pounder, just a freak athlete, does backflips and somersaults and all kinds of crazy stuff. Kind of reminds a lot of people fairly famous defensive lineman who was around here in the early 80s by the name of William Perry. Just runs like he's a 240-pound linebacker, 300-pounder, just really disruptive, super sort of developing leader in that he's already just the way he handles himself, with amongst that sort of team dynamic. I think he just is a really good fit. He's wise beyond his years, and I'd be shocked if he were not an absolute star over the next few years.
Awesome. Well, Larry Williams, I appreciate the time this morning on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. We'll talk to you soon.
Anytime.
Great stuff from Larry. Again, you can follow him on Twitter at LarryWilliamsTI. And again, while you're at it, I'm at FDuffy3. Love going back and forth with fans on Twitter and just talking football, whether it's Eagles, whether it's just the NFL, college football, NFL draft. Love talking with fans about the game and going back and forth. So feel free to hit me up on Twitter. Love everyone that gives us love and promotes the show on social media. But let's talk college football the way that we've been wrapping up the show each and every week, BT, with some matchups.
Big games this week.
Yes.
I'm so, so excited. Benny Logan's one of the guys I've gotten close to as well.
True.
I think I'm an honorary LSU fan, and I can't wait for LSU-Alabama this week.
My favorite game of the year, every year.
We talked about it, if you could go to a rivalry game, this would be over Yankees-Red Sox, and I said maybe over Duke-North Carolina, but I'm excited for this game. A couple other big games. Clemson's playing Florida State.
It's a big
one.
That's obviously, they're
probably going to. The ACC winner out of that is going to probably go on to obviously to have a good leg in the championship race. So,
sure.
What matches can you give us this week to look at?
Well, I talked a lot in the college draft podcast with Ross Tucker about this Alabama LSU matchup, and one matchup I didn't talk about was LSU wide receiver Trayvon Doral, a guy that is a junior, so he's got the ability to go back for another year, but a speedster, a deep threat, can get down the field. Underclassman quarterback Brandon Harris, a true sophomore, has the ability to get vertical. He's got a strong arm. He can stand there in the pocket against the teeth of this strong Alabama rush and deliver the football to Trayvon Doral. Malachi Dupree is another receiver there for LSU who's made a number of plays.
I like Dupree.
Yeah, Dupree's an interesting guy too, but Doral has got that explosive ability, the ability to get deep, and now he's going to be matched up sometimes on Alabama cornerback Cyrus Jones, a senior, a little bit undersized, technician, smart, tough, good run defender, everything you would expect from a Nick Saban cornerback. Cyrus Jones brings that. He doesn't have great size. He didn't have great vertical speed, and that will be the big test here when he is matched up on Doral. Will he be able to keep pace with him downfield?
I feel like he's been there forever.
He has been. He's been playing for a long time. But Jones is a really interesting guy, just in his own right, just because he's got the instincts. He's got experience. He's a good run defender. Does a lot of things well. He played most of the year last year with a sports hernia, I believe it was, and he played with some sort of an injury, so that may have affected how athletic he looked on tape. But really interesting matchup. Minka Fitzpatrick is a freshman corner who's made a number of different plays for them, so you can expect to see Doral matched up on Fitzpatrick as well.
Do you like the skill set, the skill guys from LSU? Because I know, obviously, they had the Odell Beckhams, they have, Ruben Randall. They've had guys come out.
Sure.
But I always feel like when I watch their passing game, I'm like, ugh. They leave a lot on the field, it seems like.
Well, I mean, it helps that you've got that running game that takes so much of the limelight that, Brandon Harris only has to throw it, 15
That's
times
true,
a game.
Leonard Fournette.
Yeah, you've got Leonard Fournette, so he only has to throw it 15 times a game. Harris has been up and down, but I think that, a true sophomore, played a little bit last year. Anthony Jennings was the starter last year, and a lot of people thought he would win the job again this year, but since he was suspended for most of camp after some off-field issue over the summer, Harris took over the job, and any time I've watched Harris, he's always flashed because he's a big kid, really strong arm, can move a little bit, but he's not a runner. He wants to stay in the pocket and deliver the football. I'm excited to watch him in the summer leading up into next year as he becomes draft eligible. But Harris has always intrigued me. Again, he's been a little bit up and down, but he's got the ability, and he's gotten better throughout the course of the season. He's gotten more consistent. Really excited to watch that end of the matchup. There's all kinds of other matchups you can watch, you know, whether it's Fournette against Reggie Ragland, this offensive line with Vidal Alexander going up against this Alabama defensive front with A'shaun Robinson and Jerron Reed. This is going to be an awesome game.
It's going to be a big game, yeah.
No question about it.
What else you got?
All right, so staying in the SEC, battle in the trenches here. You've got Texas A&M, tackle Jermaine Ifedi, who a lot of people think, you know, we talked with Lance Zierlein from NFL.com, and he thinks Ifedi is a potential first-round pick. That would make 4 years in a row that Texas A&M would have a first-rounder along the offensive line. I don't necessarily see Ifedi that way. I'll be interested to see if he does decide to declare because he is a junior. But then also, you know, he's got the ability. You saw heavy hands. He can move people at the point of attack. He's got light feet. So you look at the total package and you're like, okay, you know, this guy should be a pretty high pick. But technique-wise, I think he still has a ways to go. I haven't gotten a chance to dig too deep into this season's tape, but just off of what I saw last year, I didn't necessarily see a guy that was ready to be a top 20, top 25 pick. He's going to have a big test this week, you know, because Auburn, they've got Carl Lawson back last week, a guy that was a very disruptive player for them in week one, had a hip injury, missed the entire season up until this past week, and he came back like gangbusters and was very, very disruptive last Saturday. So Lawson is a guy who has the ability to be one of the top edge rushers in this class. He's a junior that may declare just because the senior group doesn't have too many edge rushers that are going to be drafted too high. He's playing that role that you saw last year in the Muschamp defense at Florida. He's playing this role in Auburn that Dante Fowler played last year as this defensive end that kind of moves all over the formation. He'll be matched up at times against Ifedi, and I'll be excited to watch that matchup.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not a big matchup in terms of people thinking skill positions, but the one thing I've watched and noticed throughout, you know, especially this year, it's all offensive defensive line. So that should be a big matchup in terms of who can win that matchup.
No question. So then last matchup, Rutgers against Michigan. You know, not, it's obviously Rutgers is new to the conference, so this isn't a very historic rivalry. But
I smell a rivalry now.
Yeah. You know, Rutgers, they've got a couple of players, got a couple of these upperclassmen that have the ability to make some noise. And Leonte Carew, who was suspended for a good chunk of the season, came back. And he's just been so productive since he re-entered the lineup. Has caught double-digit passes multiple times over the last month. And he'll be going up against Michigan, the talented secondary there with the Wolverines, led by Jordan Lewis, a junior who has already said that he's going to stay in school. So he's not going to come out for this year. But look for Lewis as a guy that is going to be one of the top senior corners a year from now. Is very, very talented. It's going to be a good matchup between those two guys because they're both very similar body types, similar athletic capabilities. Excited to see those two go head-to-head.
First of all, let's wait till see at the end of the year.
Sure.
Come out, he's saying that now in the middle of the year. And second of all, I remember watching Lewis versus Burbridge in the Michigan State game, which obviously was a classic game. And they were just battling. I mean, Burbridge certainly came out on top, but Lewis certainly had his moments where we played well. So I like to kind of see a guy in a game and then watch him.
So you watched Burbridge. Let me hear your thoughts on Burbridge.
As I watched the game, I beginning of the game, I wasn't a huge fan of him. But as the game kept going on and on, the kid battled. He was a bigger kid going up against Lewis. But Lewis,
a little bit smaller,
they were just battling. And I respected both sides. Seeing, you know, I'm a little bit of a Michigan lover, so I kind of like was hoping Michigan to win.
See, I didn't know you were a Michigan guy, and C-Mac, Chris McPherson's a Notre Dame fan. I had no idea about this leading in.
Well, okay, so my Michigan ties, just not to get off topic, but my Michigan ties go to Charles Woodson. Love Charles Woodson. I wanted to go to Michigan. Okay. My mom wouldn't let me. So from that point on, I was like, go Big Blue. So. But I was watching that game, and I was just, you know, I was liking Lewis being a Michigan fan, but I really was like, this kid Burbridge can play. So I like him. I want to see him. Doesn't seem like the most athletic guy, but maybe there's something about that Michigan State green or something that makes it look slow. But I don't, you know, I really respect the guy, especially how much he battled. He was injured in the game as well, and I think he caught 16 passes, 15 passes, something like that.
Exactly. So again, like you said earlier, it's a huge week of college football. Very excited to see. And look, This is the week, apparently, that a lot of the Senior Bowl invites are starting to go out. So we'll start getting some reports of people that are confirming and are going to go. I would imagine that we'll start hearing from Tony Pauline soon enough, talking about underclassmen that are definitely going to declare.
Can't wait to see the tournaments.
Very, very excited about the coming weeks here when it comes to the NFL draft process. But thanks again to Greg, to Vinny, and Larry, and all of you out there listening, whether you're on iTunes, on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, and, of course, PhiladelphiaEagles.com and the Eagles mobile app. Thank you. And if you get the time, rate the show. Again, it's the best way to support the podcast. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. Shoot me a question. I want to hear from everybody out there and keep all of you happy. So wherever you listen, just go and shoot us a question, shoot us a comment, and we can keep making this show better each and every week. All that being said, I think that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast from my producer, BT. I'm Frank Duffy. We'll talk to you next week.